Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to ModPath Chat, the official podcast of Modern Pathology, featuring interviews with authors and experts on the latest science, technology, and developments in the field of pathology. Your host, Dr. George Netto, is the editor-in-chief of Modern Pathology and the chair of pathology at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. Here's Dr. Netto.
Welcome to today's special episode of ModPath Chat. In this third installment of our four-part series covering this year's ASCAP Lung course on lung diseases, I'm joined today by Dr. Natasha Rechtman, who served as one of the distinguished faculty of the lung course. Dr. Rechtman is an attending pathologist at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center with a focus on thoracic tumors. She's an expert in the field of lung cancer, a member of the International Association for the Study of Lung Cancer, a member of the NCI Steering Committee for Thoracic Malignancies, and probably most importantly for me, and I'm biased, one of the stellar associate editors of our journal, Modern Pathology. Thank you, Natasha, for accepting the invitation.
George, thank you so much for this wonderful introduction, and thank you so much for the invitation to be here. I'm delighted. And we go way back. I really am grateful to all my teachers from my residency. You're one of my wonderful teachers. I really could not be where I am today without the wonderful things that I learned as a resident. So whenever, we have that connection that I wanted to mention. So very happy to be here for various reasons.
Thank you. We're all very proud of your achievements, and so let's thank you. That was very kind of you. So basically, what we're trying to do in 10 to 15 minutes is just offer our audience an hors d'oeuvre to the main course, which is your lecture that is accessible. The long course lectures are all on demand accessible. And I would encourage our audience, if they like what they hear, which I'm pretty sure they will, to go on and listen to the details on the website. And also there'll be a supplement issue of Modern Pathology dedicated to the long course that we'll cover what we talk about today. So with that in mind, let's just touch on the highlights and tell me why you picked neuroendocrine tumors as a topic of your talk in the long course.
Well, I was delighted to be invited by the course organizers to speak on this topic. I think they picked me to cover this because this has been my area of academic interest over the years. And I was really delighted to speak about this topic because I feel a lot of the incredible progress over the last decade plus has really been in the area of non-small cell, non-neuroendocrine carcinomas. And that field really completely transformed, right? This is non-small cell lung cancer is sort of a paradigm of personalized medicine, right? Where the treatment is completely driven by targets and targeted therapies. And sort of practicing in that mode really brings in the contrast where we are in neuroendocrine field, which is a completely different situation. Here, it's really been an incredible struggle to move this into the age of personalized therapies. I mean, they're really, right now, virtually non-existent. However, there's been just this incredible amount of research, laboratory-based research, mainly in the area of small cell lung cancer, that I think really setting us up for next decade to see hopefully the transformation of this of how we approach small cell lung cancer, hopefully other neuroendocrine cancers, to personalize, to understand what the subsets are, and to personalize therapy so that the therapy that we give, really we know which patients they will benefit. I think just working, being a thoracic pathologist, that just brings into contrast the need for progress and the need for more science in neuroendocrine area. I also really like this area because it really crosses all organ sites, right? Small cell carcinoma is something that we see at any site, but it's by far most common, 90% in lung. So whatever we study, I feel benefits, throughout the organ systems, much more so than, for example, solving a subset in lung adenocarcinoma, which is wonderful, but it does not extend. Whatever we learn in small cell to some and large cell neuroendocrine carcinoma extends to other organ sites.
And I think that's a very important point of that applicability of all, you know, classifications of neuroendocrine tumor and the push that is happening across organs to harmonize that classification, which we'll come back to small cell in a second, which clearly is the most important probably player among the group. But I noticed in the talk that I enjoyed listening to it tremendously that you hit on some gray zones. So as far as like in carcinoid and large cell neuroendocrine, the LCNEC group, there's some gray zones and some changes in the classification. Would be nice if you can share with our audience what are these and how is this transferable to other organs or how different it is from GI, for example?
Right. So let me start by commenting on this issue of this basically what we can refer to as proliferative carcinoids in the lung, which fall into the still fall into the gray zone of classification. One thing I would mention is that it's not an everyday problem that we encounter, even as a lung pathologist. And the reason for that is that vast majority, so the disease of lung carcinoids is predominantly more than 90% early stage, low proliferative resected tumors. And this is generally they tend to be straightforward. There is a great variation on morphology, but in terms of classification, these are very, very straightforward tumors. And then the criteria for them were developed in this primary tumor resected disease, which is by and large defined by fairly strict range of proliferation rates. But what happens, there is a percentage of carcinoids that are aggressive and they're metastatic, although the rate is not nearly as high as in, let's say, in the pancreas or intestinal ileal and neuroendocrine tumors, which are in a predominant number of cases metastatic. So all these concepts of proliferative, more aggressive neuroendocrine tumors are much more developed in GI and pancreas by virtue of that setting, that situation arising much more commonly. But it does occur in the lung. So within the last few years, we published a study fully on stage 4 carcinoids. And once you look specifically at that disease, which is an uncommon disease, but once you look at that disease, then proliferative variants are very common, like a quarter. And they're very hard currently to classify because they get beyond this ceiling threshold that is set currently by metastatic for mitoticons, which was defined based on early stage tumors. So this is sort of the background to this conundrum. But I think, as I mentioned in the talk, I leave it for the viewers to check it out, and I will certainly summarize it in detail in the review article. There is really an explosion of series because when you encounter a case that just does not fit. This is sort of really gives you, and now there is a much better understanding of this in GI and pancreas, which clearly is a very similar phenomenon. So that's why it's in the last, even the year, there's been a bit of an explosion of small series documenting these cases. So the WHO, we actually just got an announcement, will be released in April. This is the fifth edition of Thoracic WHO, which was completed. It does not, it's still, at the time of writing, there really was not as much data on these variants. So it does not, it still leaves them to default into large cell neuroendocrine. So this problem of classification will continue. But at least our understanding that these are basically analogous to NAT grade 3, I think is becoming, you know, more better understood. There is no question in the next classification that should be further clarified. But basically, that's I address that issue in detail, even though, again, it's not an everyday issue that we'll see for thoracic specimens. But when you do encounter it, it can be kind of puzzling in terms of what to do with those tumors.
And a couple of words about large cell neuroendocrine carcinoma. I mean, it's always been, how do you treat them? Should they really be treated like small cell? And then does it matter that you diagnose? We know that it does. So can you tell our audience just a couple of words about the biologic or the molecular subtypes that potentially can guide us in this exact question?
Right. I know very well that the term large cell neuroendocrine tumors that do not fit into the categories we understand very easily and that are very well defined, classic small cell, classic carcinoids. Once we get into the neuroendocrine proliferative tumors that are out of that spectrum, everybody's blood pressure goes up. My blood pressure goes up, and I've been like spending, you know, looking at so many of these cases. And I think where we are right now is we're gaining much better understanding of the biology and that heterogeneity that we see really corresponds to molecular heterogeneity, that these tumors, what we now kind of put together as these neuroendocrine, large cell neuroendocrine carcinomas, really arise from probably different pathways and represent kind of this convergence of different tumor types. But at this time, this is in terms of the clinical, how we address it clinically in our microscope, in our daily practice, I don't think we have a good solution. I mean, we have a WHO criteria for identifying these tumors. And the challenge is that there are some gray zones between, on the one hand, and most commonly what we discuss is small cell and large cell neuroendocrine, where is the tumor cell size and amount of cytoplasm and chromatin qualities too much for small cell? Where is, because it's a spectrum. So, and then we don't have, unlike many other differentials in pathology, we don't have a biomarker. It's entirely morphologic. And on the other end of the spectrum, we have a differential of large cell neuroendocrine versus poorly differentiated non-small cell carcinoma, generally adenocarcinoma. Again, you know, you can have we know that very neuroendocrine marker expression. We know biologically some of the large cell neuroendocrines have molecular features of adenocarcinoma. So where is in some cases, it's truly a spectrum. So we're trying to classify cases some of them in the gray zones. Fortunately, many of them really fall into the buckets we can recognize, but there are gray zones. I really think until we have objective markers, like we have P40 and TTF1, it's a common problem that non-small cell can be very difficult to classify by morphology. And there's been a lot of challenges, but now we have markers that we can rely on. And I think that brings much more reproducibility and accuracy. And that's where I'm hoping we will get with all the additional biological knowledge, molecular knowledge, that we will understand better what the definitions are. And that's what I hope for the next decade, that we will have objective biomarkers, that it will be like adeno versus squamous. You see what you recognize in your adeno carcinoma is something you can do as a certain markers that will help either classify it or guide treatment. So something practical, which is most important. So I think there is a lot of work to be done. I think what I would tell pathologists is that I completely agree. There are a lot of challenges in this area, and just to have the hope is that that we will have progress. That we are currently having progress on molecular side, that will translate into biomarkers. But at this time, that's where we are. It's a morphologic diagnosis, and there are cases that fall into gray zone.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Excellent. And let's finish up with the most important member, which is the small cell. There were a couple of things that caught my attention is, which is really occurs a lot of time. Not every time we do neuroendocrine markers to diagnose something as small cell, but then when you're faced with either very little expression of neuroendocrine or negative expression, and you touched upon a couple of players there, like the SMARC, deficient undifferentiated tumors and NOTS and the POW2F. Can you share with our audience what's the significance of these entities?
Thank you for bringing it up, George. I think that the story with neuroendocrine low small cell and understanding what it represents is the most exciting story that I have been involved in and that I have witnessed in this area in many years. I think it just, even though this applies, so the vast majority of small cell carcinomas are positive for our usual neuroendocrine markers, synaptophysin, chromogranin, but we know, we've always known, right, that there is this concept, even of neuroendocrine negative small cell, but generally that applies for small cells that are negative for synapto and chromo, right? Usually, you know, in the thoracic pathology, we do use CD56. We don't love it, but the reason it's been used is because of that issue. 20% of small cells can be negative for synapto and chromo. And this was another very sensitive marker. The issue, it's very nonspecific. And then in the recent years, INSM1 came along. This is really a great nuclear marker. So with all of those markers on board, the issue of truly neuroendocrine negative small cell becomes exceptionally rare, but it does exist. And nevertheless, when you encounter a tumor that has really, really minimal or virtually negative expression of neuroendocrine markers, which is negative for TTF1, it can be really puzzling. It always puzzled me, like, what do these tumors represent? Why are they doing this? So this marker, PAL2F3, comes completely from laboratory studies. It was not from pathologists. It came from a screen in cell line work as a dependent marker, so marker on which the cell survival of the subset of small cell depends. And then when they looked into it further, they noted this is kind of a very peculiar subset that has low neuroendocrine markers. I have to say, when I first read that paper and saw other comments, I wasn't sure if those were really small cell carcinomas. It was just so surprising. But, you know, in recent years, we've started working with all these markers in our group and because of the great interest of our oncology group, because the thought is that these are the markers that will, so PAL2F3 and other transcription factors will transform the field of small cell and will allow personalized medicine, because the expression is thought to be associated with different therapeutic sensitivities. So we started working with these markers, and we were really struck to find, particularly for this PAL2F3, that it is the marker that defines these small cells that I either completely neuroendocrine negative, again, which are very rare, or have really minimal expression of neuroendocrine markers. It's a diffuse transcription factor, diffuse nuclear factor. So it's fascinating biologically. It's a marker. I refer for a little more detail to my talk, but it's a marker of so-called Taft cells. That's another fascinating story. The Taft cells. Who's ever heard of Taft cells, right?
Amazing. I saw the pictures, yes.
This is this mysterious cell type that now is emerging as related to this about 10% of small cell. There is so much to learn. Is this just lung, or how about extrapulmonary small cells? Are some of them also related to this very unique cell type? And again, we don't know if it's origin or if it just recapitulates the phenotype. There is so much to learn, but, you know, so biologically, absolutely fascinating, and it gives us a diagnostic marker. We all know some small cells are very straightforward to diagnose, like, you know, typical adeno. You don't need markers to diagnose typical adenos, keratinizing squamous. We don't need markers for that. Some small cells are like that, right? If they have very, very classic morphology, you have a really well preserved specimen, especially in cytology. The reality is that some cases are so crushed, poorly preserved, sections are thick, and there are new mimics. Like you mentioned, George, there is now this other undifferentiated tumors, particularly in smokers, the SMARCA4 deficient undifferentiated tumors or they will call them sarcomas or sarcomatoid tumors, can be very close mimics in biopsies that are crushed. They can express neuroendocrine markers. Ki-67 is 100%. So there are basaloid squamous cell carcinomas and crushed biopsies can be tricky markers. And in general, I think where practice is moving is even if we have a really great feeling about the diagnosis and confidence, we will do just confirmatory markers to confirm the impression of small cell. And so this is where these situations, in some cases just confirmatory, in some cases when you're truly not sure because of preservation and you really want markers to support your diagnosis of small cell, and we encounter these cases. And that's why I think this PAL2F3 is will be a very helpful marker. I think this will be, it will be useful in practice. So that's very exciting.
Excellent. Very exciting, and I can sense the excitement and the ideas for a lot of upcoming projects. And
I hope our GU colleagues who see a small cell will be testing this out as well? I mean,
exactly. Maybe we should do it in prostate for those not so typical small cell after hormone withdrawal and all that.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you very much for an engaging conversation. And again, be in the lookout for the audience for the supplement containing the review on the talk. And please go ahead and listen to the talk, which is a very exciting talk. Natasha, I wish you the best, and I really appreciate all your help you do for the journal. I know it's a lot of work, but it's very important work.
George, thank you so much. I really enjoyed speaking with you. I really appreciate the invitation to be here, and thank you for all the opportunities.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Any opinions expressed in this podcast are the speaker's own and do not represent the views of Modern Pathology, Springer Nature, UAB, or USCAP. Your ModPath Chat host and scientific director is Dr. George Netto. Producers are Christina Crow, Amber Jackson, Dr. Sarah Jang, and Dr. Catherine Ketchum. Technical direction is provided by Kaminsky Productions, music by Mitch Neubauer. Thanks to the authors, reviewers, and editors of Modern Pathology for making this podcast possible.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host
Niñas Bien Podcast. We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.